Today is Wednesday, October 3rd, 2018, and this is Daily DVR. All right, everybody, welcome back. My name is Axel. Daily DVR is a part of the DVR Podcast Network. Check us out at dvrpodcast.com. We got a couple other great pods like Podcast Winterfell and Westworld Theorycast and all that stuff, so check it out. Our Patreon, patreon.com/DVR. I tell you that because we do this show 5 days a week. Only three of the days are available to the general public. Tuesday and Thursday are Patreon only. And I've been having a lot of fun doing those shows. So become a patron. Help support the podcast. I do appreciate it. I'm trying to make this my job, people. That's the truth. You can contact us, dvrpodcast@gmail.com. So let's get back into it. We got a good amount of news today. And I have some feedback, too. So Andy sent some feedback for Better Call Saul. I'm going to go over in-depth into Better Call Saul today, the last episode, and Andy has some feedback for that. He had some other feedback, which I'm going to save for tomorrow, because Saul's going to take up a lot of time. But first off, we have our main man, Kellum. You were talking about how various people watch TV on today's show. He's referencing yesterday's show. My wife and I are cord cutters. We have Amazon Prime, which we keep active. We keep Netflix and HBO active only when shows we like are on. We recently subscribed to Hulu because with Spotify Premium, you can get the basic Hulu subscription and it only adds $3 to a Spotify monthly subscription. That's interesting. Only mentioning that last detail because I had no idea that deal existed until a few months ago. We also subscribe to Filmstruck, the Criterion Collection Turner Classic Movies streaming service, which I highly recommend for anyone who is a fan of classic and foreign films. Thank you, Kellum. And you know, I have to admit, I think I thought Kellum lived in Scotland. Maybe it was the name. But then when he wrote me, he said he lived in Staten Island. I was like, I remember that too. So it just goes to show, I love having this podcast and being able to connect with y'all who have been longtime listeners and new people coming in. And don't ever hesitate to ask me a question about myself or divulge something that you think I might know, you know, because we all know each other through the podcasting and Twitter and Facebook and all that. And I just want to kind of clear that out of the way. I'll make mistakes. And if you make mistakes, that's fine too. I never care. You know, I mean, gosh, sometimes I don't remember like where my wife went to high school or something. You know what I mean? Like, let's be honest here, people. So Kellum, I always think to do that with HBO and Showtime. Okay. I'll cancel. And then you know what happens? I want the next thing, or it takes dedication. I'm glad you brought this up. Because when I was talking about DirecTV yesterday and different packages and how you actually watch TV and how, you know, we're all going to want the new this Disney streaming service and now you can get Hulu through this. I know people who get HBO through Amazon Prime and there's other services. Amazon, you can buy, has become a pass-through. So they have their own what is called in the industry a walled garden that they can then give you other content. So you can get HBO through Amazon, but it might actually be different from HBO Go or HBO Now or what HBO is putting on demand for your cable provider. It's so complicated that that's why I've found that the thing that I rely most on is a website or an app like Just Watch or Metacritic. Not for critiques, but for where it's streaming, just to find out where I can get something. So, for instance, we saw yesterday that it was the beginning of October, and both Amazon Prime, all three of the big ones, Netflix, Prime, and Hulu. I should just call them Netu from now on, right? Where's Natu? Natu. Does that make sense? Anyway, they dropped like 150 quote-unquote new streaming titles. But the truth is, all of those titles were available on another one of those three streaming methods, or on demand, or HBO. So it's just like this content gets passed around, right? And I just feel like sooner or later, it just boils down back to the content. And I can see what you're saying here. That's interesting. And this is, and just a shout out. So if you have Spotify Premium, you can get a basic Hulu subscription, which I believe is $7.99 with what they call limited commercials, but it's what, 3 or 4 commercial interruptions. They always try to snag an extra one in before the credits so you don't know if the episode's really over, which I think is actually not a smart thing to do to people. And that's where Netflix has always been at an advantage, that you never feel like Netflix is doing something to you, but saying, here's a movie. And when they do, when they obstruct into your habits is when people get upset. So that's pretty cool, though, that I didn't realize you can save, I guess, $5 off of Hulu monthly if you add it to a Spotify Premium account. So thanks for telling us, Kellum. And Filmstruck is something that I'm really interested in, but I feel like I get a lot of that stuff because of the library. I go to the library a lot, and my local libraries, there's 3 or 4 of them around me that I go to regularly, and they have all the older stuff, though I'm sure there's more stuff, and I'm sure, especially with Criterion, we had, when I used to work at World of Video in Manhattan, we had every Criterion that was ever made. Now, they were original, they started with DVD, and that was kind of their thing. But I somehow remember us having some kind of special VHS they did or something, or it was for another movie. I can't remember if it was like a Gondry thing, or, you know, it's one of those guys, or Linkletter. But anyway, that is, Filmstruck is becoming more popular. I think that Filmstruck is going to eventually be absorbed by, that used to be, Hulu used to kind of push that. I don't know if people remember this, but Hulu, when they started out, they were TV the next day and like artsy classic movies and Criterion Collection. I don't know if they still have a lot of that stuff, but I would check out Filmstruck. That's interesting. Turner Classic, I check it all the time, and I just watch so much stuff. I should mention it more on the show. But thanks, Callum. All right. Now we have some feedback from Tarek, and Tarek says, yo, what up, yo? I've been hoping for an adaptation of Arthur C. Clarke's Space Odyssey series, 2001, 2010, 2061, and 3001 for a few years now. Netflix would probably do it justice. 4 seasons, 1 per book, 10 episodes a season. Nothing would make me happier. That's awesome. I think that's in response to, I was talking about Rendezvous with Rama. Would be a great one. That's when they happen upon an ancient ship that's the size of a city, and they learn all. It's a really great book. You should go out and read it. And that had subsequent sequels, as with so many of these sci-fi writers. And I think 2061 and 3001 were written with another author, as some of the, I think the Rama books were later. I really hope that, Tarek, that this happens, because I think Arthur C. Clarke, I've always wondered why not there aren't more films from Arthur C. Clarke's work. I guess he is thought of as hard sci-fi for a lot of people. And for some reason, people have, he's always been my favorite. And I have found that there is just seems to be more of a cult around people like Heinlein, just all those guys, Asimov, all those guys. Oh my God, live on the podcast, I just got the fucking presidential alert. That is creepy. Don't like it. Initial reaction, I don't like it. Very creepy. Very creepy. And it doesn't even show up in your messages. It's just a presidential alert. Oh, so weird. So I have to keep this in the podcast. So I don't like the feeling of this. I got to tell you, I especially don't like it because it's coming from Trump, I'll be honest with you, but I was just trying to be straight up. If this was coming from Obama or any, I still don't like it. It just makes me feel weird. Just reminds you of they're in your phone. The call is coming from inside the house, from inside your phone. All right. Sorry, Tarek. To get back to it, I hope that Arthur C. Clarke gets mined. Anybody out there listening, I hope you do too. If you haven't read Arthur C. Clarke, go out and read his books. They're fucking fantastic. He is such a straightforward writer. He was not as colorful as fancy. I mean, he's a hard sci-fi. A lot of his writing is technical, and even the way he describes emotions can be, I mean, the guy invented HAL, people. So that's kind of sometimes, but in many works, he does get emotional. And I had great emotion from his work, and also the guy, he's multicultural, diverse. Like, he has novels that star women and people of not only different ethnicities, but, you know, biologically different. And I mean, he got into sex, all that stuff. So yeah, Arthur C. Clarke is out there. And if you haven't read his books, there's even like kids' books like Dolphin Island and stuff that are really fantastic. Just great stuff out there. All right. Thank you, Tarek. Thank you, Kellum. Very much appreciate your feedback. Love you guys. You rock. And let's move on to some news. The first bit of news, we got to start with the Star Wars news, baby. Dome, dome. So anyway, my favorite news site, Dark Horizons, and I saw a couple other people reporting on this, that there has been some leaks. They started shooting the new Star Wars series for the Disney streaming service, which Jon Favreau is executive producing. And from the sound of it, they're doing a sort of Game of Thrones type. Well, I should say, because Alan Taylor is doing two of them. They're doing a Game of Thrones type system where they're bringing in like five directors that do like two episodes each. Okay, so they're giving them a little bit more to work with. And also, when you do that, especially in the first season of a television show, it allows, though, you're saying that you want their voice to be a part of it. They're a bit more than a hired gun, right? It's becoming more popular now in television that these directors are not hired guns. They're become part of the production. But generally, which is like 90% of all production, you're a hired gun. You're not being hired to be an auteur, okay, for television show. And you'd be surprised at the level of television shows that you think would be hiring for auteur, but they're not. They just need somebody who knows how to run a production, because this is a job, right? And bringing in Alan Taylor was a great. Dave Filoni from Rebels and our favorite of Star Wars nerddom is going to be directing two episodes. Craig Frazier, who is the DP on Rogue One and has a lot of other things to his credit, is going to be shooting it. The whole thing, which is awesome. It's great to have the same DP. And the next piece of news, another Game of Thrones before I get to the Werner Herzog being the bad guy. Pedro Pascal is going to be the star. That is cool because there's a multiplicity to him, right? When I think of him, I think of him almost as a fluid actor. He could be anything or anyone. He could be strong. He could be vulnerable. So I think that's an awesome choice. And it sounds like an adult choice, even though I know this is not going to be rated R, right? We know that already. This is going to be like maximum PG-13. But also Werner Herzog is supposedly, he said he was going to be the villain in a big franchise project codenamed Huckleberry, and that's what it's codenamed, Huckleberry. I always love the Star Wars codenames. So this is great news. This is like four or five pieces of news together. I'm down for this. These are good people. Let's see it. They're not, you know, these are some quality people who have done quality work, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm very interested to see what happens. Every piece of news that comes out about this Disney streaming service says to me that they're actually putting a lot of time into it and people are excited and having fun with it. Of course, they're going to earn a bazillion dollars and control the world. But also, we're going to get to see some fun Star Wars stories. So I'm down with it. Next up, another little piece of new news is this George Carlin biopic. So Moneyball scribe Stan Shervin has been set as both writer and producer of a new feature-length biopic about the late legendary comic George Carlin. That is awesome. Who is going to play George Carlin? That's why I want to talk about this. Because I've seen this on the webs and people talking about it. And I'd like to see, if you want to write in and tell me, email us, dvrpodcast@gmail.com. Who do you think should be Carlin? I'm going to tell you who I pick. And it sounds crazy, but I think it could work. Jim Gaffigan. I know it sounds nuts. I know, first of all, he's like a Christian. Well, no, it's not. He's Catholic. He's got a million kids. He's like the anti-Carlin. I understand that. But I loved his TV show. I thought it was great. And I've seen him play bit parts that surprised me. He is a total professional stand-up comic who's been doing it for 25-something years all over the world. Huge. So I think he could bring that inside, like that stand-up part to it. And I think he could do it. I really do. I mean, he'd need to lose weight. But I kind of fell in love with this idea. I was like, you know what? This actually could work. So you tell me, you write in and you tell me, who do you think could play George Carlin? And were you a big Carlin fan? I'll tell you this, Carlin's TV show made me laugh. His stand-up never made me laugh because I'd always be going, oh my God, he's so right. You know, it's like, I feel like him and Lenny Bruce was a little, they both had their silly sides that would make you giggle, you know? Like the dirty grandpa kind of angle, dirty uncle. But when he went into his politics and religion and just his mind fuck stuff, it would never make me laugh. And it almost would make me sad because I was like, wow, he's saying something here to explore. I don't always agree with the guy. You know me, I don't think we should follow comics as our guides in our intellectual pursuits, people. But he provided a gateway to opening up your mind and thinking about things in a different way. And so that's why I always appreciated Carlin. And again, I say Jim Gaffigan. What do you all say? All right, I think that's all the news I got. Oh, wait, I got one more thing. I wanted to bring up, this is podcast, really podcast news. I guess I'll call a new segment called Checking In on a Podcast. And I wanted to bring everyone's attention to the latest episode of The Watch on The Ringer. I've also joined their Facebook group, which I have to say, I'm kind of surprised that people are pretty civil, intelligent people, funny. It's a pretty cool Facebook group. Who knows? Probably in 3 weeks, it'll descend into madness like everything on the internet, but whatever. I'm enjoying reading and commenting every once in a while. It's kind of funny. But so that's Andy Greenberg and Chris do this podcast together on The Ringer, but they used to do it when it was the old thing it was. I can't even remember what The Ringer was before it was The Ringer. And they do a really good job, and I listen to them pretty much every week. And what happened is Andy Greenberg wrote a pilot for based on a book series or a book called Briar Patch, which I have never read. And it stars Rosaria Dawson and all that. And he hooked up with Sam Ismail, who does Mr. Robot, and he's been on the show. I think that's how they met him. And actually, Andy, I think, was in the writer's room for Legion, though I think he was not a writer. I think he was basically hanging out in the room and doing what they told him to do. Like a writer's assistant. I'm sure that they let him talk and have ideas, but now he's graduated from critic and to doing this and making his show and making the pilot. And he came back he's the creator, executive producer. I'm not sure if he's the showrunner. I think he's show running it. And it was just a great episode because this is something that I've talked about before. that I think it's unfair maybe to think that, but if you're a critic of something, you should at least try to make it, right? That's just how I feel. A lot of people would disagree with me actually and get angry. That's not true. You can be a critic and have never tried. I just don't feel that way. I don't trust a person's opinion 100% on a film or something. When I'm talking about like a podcast, not when I'm talking to a friend, of course, I trust their opinion and its ideas, but you should have some kind of background a little bit. Like I talk about TV and I talk about film and I have a background in it. I haven't made a huge thing, but I've been on sets. You know, I know about it. Okay. I have, you know, as DJ Tim Hines likes to tell you, remind you, I have a degree. So it's a little bit of a background, okay? Enough to know that it's a job, right? To demystify it. That's my point. And it was a good podcast because Chris Ryan does a good job of kind of interviewing Andy, his partner, and saying, what did you learn now that you're going to be a critic again, you know, and you're going to come on this podcast? Is it going to change the way you talk about things? And he kind of said, well, you know, now I understand why people always like things, which is exactly what I have said. And some people have told me in the past, maybe I can be too harsh sometimes, but I give too much credit. Like, you know, when I come out of a movie, I'm like, well, if you did this and this, it could be, you know, I'm a little bit more positive, you know, on TV shows. I try to at least, I think, of course, Game of Thrones comes to mind. People complain about Game of Thrones and, oh, blah, blah. Oh, it didn't have the Nymeria's necklace was different or some bullshit. It's like, okay, I understand. But you also understand that this is in a production of thousands of people across the entire world. It's the largest film or television production in the history of the planet Earth that we know of. That's what Game of Thrones is. And this is something that Sam Esmail said to them on the pod, and they brought it up again. So I just thought it was fun. It reminded me, too, of that feeling of being a part of the podcast. Like, I don't know these dudes, but if we sat and talked, we'd be able to talk. You know what I'm saying? And it was interesting to hear how Andy's opinion, how he had changed. It was all the things I thought. And they're smart guys. He's a smart dude. So some of the things of just noticing what this person does, what that person does, how the chain within the production can affect what's on the screen, you know, and understanding a little bit too when critiquing who's really to blame for something. And often today, like I get so pissed off when people are like, lazy writing. That's a lazy argument is what that is. Because trust me, these motherfuckers who work 25 hours a day to bring you some dumb TV show are not lazy. Like this is hard work. And I appreciated that podcast. So that's my little love letter to them today. I appreciate those dudes. They're from a different side of the tracks from me. They're like Philly people, which I've had to get used to because I'm Jersey and New York. And for me, Jersey is North Jersey. Like South Jersey is like kind of Jersey. It's really more Philly. Like I make fun of my friend Afu all the time. I'm like, he's from Mount Holly. I'm like, Afu, you're not really from Jersey, dude. You're kind of like Philly trash. Anyway, okay, sorry about that. Now back to business. That was my little East Coast ramble there. What do we got going on next? This is a fun show so far. We got news, email, podcast, what's on, the Metacritic calendar. Let's see, what's premiering? We are in the midst of the premieres, but as I said, it's kind of slowing down and there's really not much tonight. Criminal Minds, SEAL Team, Forged in Fire, Knife or Death, a new reality competition on history. Hey, if you're a Game of Thrones fan, you might like that. Every once in a while, I like a little reality show where they make like knives or something, but sometimes they can veer off. They get a little bit too, the presentation is off. If it was more historical, I might like it. If this was like PBS Presents, Make a Knife, I would be like, I'm watching that. Meanwhile, Bob Vila's like, I can make a knife. Okay, not much. Criminal Minds, SEAL Team. Don't really watch those shows. My wife used to love Criminal Minds, but she dropped out on it. I think when Mandy Patinkin, wasn't he on that show? That was his pre-Homeland days. Okay, Just Watch. Now, today, we had another good drop on Amazon. Not much on Netflix and Hulu. There is an interest... Oh, Truth or Dare. I think this is a Blumhouse production, which I might... I think I'm going to check this out. One of these horror movies. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that this is a Blumhouse thing. Nick Simon directed it. So I might check that out. That's on Netflix. My wife will not watch that because it's too scary. Oh, Hulu got RBG. Ruth Bader Ginsburg doc. Cool. And Amazon dropped like 50 things, including Yentl, High Spirits, Jigsaw, Jurassic, Shark. Amazon Prime is so funny. There was an old one here. I remember Newbie Dews was telling me to do a throwback, and I saw some old movie that I remembered seeing on TV way back in the day. I think it was Threshold with Donald Sutherland. That was weird. Steep. They're always, oh, it was this, No Small Affair. Do you remember that? With John Cryer and Demi Moore when he's a photographer and he's like 16 and he falls in love with Demi Moore and then he like tries to make her famous by photograph. It was very strange. There's a lot. I may be misremembering, but I think in college in one of my women's studies classes, we watched this movie as part of learning about the male gaze and a series of like films where men are photographers or something. And through the camera, they get the woman they want. It's very interesting. So No Small Affair. Remember that, Newbie Dudes. All right. That's it for what's coming on. And what did I record last night? Married at First Sight. I think I'm done with that. Mayans. I haven't watched this week's episode yet, but Justin Thomas on Friday is going to be on the show, and we're going to talk about Mayans in general in the newest episode. So, Jenny, I'm going to have to take your stuff from last week and kind of blend it in there. I do apologize that we're not going to have just that episode discussion. But I don't know if I'm going to do 2 days in a row of Mayans. I'll save it for Friday with Justin. What else did I do? Carter, like that little weird Canadian show. The Purge, still haven't watched any of it. I don't know if I will. I don't know why I'm recording it. Below Deck, my wife and I watch it. I love this fucking show, Captain Lee. It's funny as hell. It's stupid. And they are in like Fiji or something, and it's gorgeous. It looks great. Mr. In Between on FX, haven't checked it out yet. It's only the second episode, though. I believe for the pilot, they did a 2-part hour long. It's only a half hour show. Frontline, Trump versus Mueller one. Gotta watch that. Frontline is the best. What I'm recording tonight, American Horror Story. I don't know why. I just fast forward through it. Because it's so fucking weird. And at the end of last episode, all of a sudden the coven witches just show up. And I'm like, what the fuck? They just killed everybody. Like literally everybody gets killed. And then the same people come back, but they're different people. Ryan Murphy's off his rocker. Survivor's on tonight. So I'm loving Survivor. I hope one person listening to this show jumped on Survivor this year for the first time. Give it a shot. Give it a shot. I'm telling you, you will like Survivor. It is so fun. Nova's back. Single Parents. I'm going to watch the second episode. The first episode had a lot of problems, but it looked like it had been kind of noted to death and they were trying to do too much. So now that they're going to get into more of the characters, good creators from The New Girl. So I think Single Parents could actually end up being a really funny show. And this Million Little Things, Big Chill clone. I don't know why I recorded it, but I probably won't even end up watching that. All right. Now's the time for the deep dive. Better Call Saul. This is episode 9. Wiedersehen, which means reunion in German. Just another fantastic episode. I say every Better Call Saul starts like that. This is the best show on television. This was shot so well. directed by Vince Gilligan, and I'm going to start a little bit with Andy's note. When I noticed in the opening credits that this episode was directed by Vince Gilligan, I knew we were in for something special. They somehow keep cranking up the tension and the dread every damn episode. I'm almost afraid to see what comes next. I'm not sure I want to see what happens to the head German. Yeah, Andy has a little bit more to say later. I'll weave it into the combo here. But what the fuck? This knocked me out. Again. This show is beyond belief. They are in a sandbox of creativity and expression and beauty and appreciation and respect of film and the moving image that is almost beyond my comprehension at this point. This show is incredible. The last scene, it's not the last scene, but one of the last scenes with Kim and Jimmy on the parking deck on the top of the roof was one of the best scenes in television in a long time. I hope it gets that appreciation. I hope it's the kind of scene that people are writing about and talking about, because it was absolutely amazing the way it was shot. The feeling of isolation and claustrophobia on top of a roof, an open air roof in a city. It was amazing. The way they constructed the series of shots, they were always hemmed in. You see Jimmy hemmed in. You see the light on Kim's side, but Jimmy's hemmed in by that building behind him, which the frame is great. I think they frame Kim against it. It's in the right, those long windows that are kind of dark. It looks so mid-century America, decline and rise, but never what it once was. It said so much. So, all right, I'm going to read my notes. I've come up with a way of doing these too, is after I watch the episode, I just use voice to text and just kind of ramble. So we start with the opening. We see the fruition of Jimmy and Kim working the scam together. So I didn't understand what was going on at first, but then it became apparent that what Kim was trying to do was replace those plans that during the meeting in the last episode, where she kind of took a stand against the boss and agreed with the woman, that they didn't have time to change the plans. They'd have to resubmit them. It would take months because he wanted the buildings to look the same, right? So this is what Kim accomplished. Why did she accomplish this? This is what became important to me. The way this was shot, the scam, I particularly loved the static shot where it was a wide shot, but a mid of Kim and the woman who was working at the office. They've got the plans laid out, the desk, and the way they use the frame of the desk it was just absolutely incredible. And they just kept the shot. I think they were on it for about a minute 30, and it was just one take. And it was wonderful. I mean, I'm sure they did other takes, but they had to just use one take. There was no cutting it. It was really fantastic. So let's talk about that. Why did she do that? It was cool seeing them work together. They definitely vibe. She was doing that, for me, to show herself that what she would normally have to use grit, intelligence, hard work to accomplish, to get this done. Because she was getting things like this done before just by talking to the person, not by, I guess you would call it more casual manipulation, because that's where we start to understand where really is the line. Where's the line between Kim being smart enough to talk someone into something legally and Jimmy being smart enough to connive his way into a manipulation that benefits him, right? Where's the line? That's where this whole grifter lawyer thing goes. It's just like they say, I know directors and actors are always fond of saying, if I didn't do this, I'd be a criminal. But there's a little bit of truth in that. right? Because it's a falsehood. It's a recreation of reality, and to manipulate it to suit your purposes, your ends, emotionally or otherwise. And for Jimmy, that's what's happening here, right? He's getting off on the manipulation and the kind of the power of, and I think it also suits him on a subconscious level that we'd have to have a whole psychological discussion to understand. For Kim, it's more of a flirtation and experimentation, a way perhaps for their relationship to continue, but also to test that the thing she'd have to work hard for, she can get with Jimmy's methods, right? Because her inclination first was to get that, to do that change for her boss. But she said no. And the reason she said no is because she was overworked. But then she's starting to think, maybe I can achieve these things by doing what Jimmy does. And I kind of get off on it with him. You know, I get this rush and this connection with him. But we see afterwards, when they're in the diner and the feat has been accomplished and Jimmy is saying, okay, we're going to roll this. Now we're going to start working with the crooks and the criminals. We're going to start doing that. And of course, he mentions, they all know me as Saul Goodman, and shows the card, which was awesome. The way they weave that into this episode too was amazing. And we see that Kim is saying, no, we shouldn't do this to help out people that are crooks and all this. We should do it for good. You know, there is a dividing line there, and it was a flirtation. And the show was complex, and they threw me for a loop last episode, and now I understand better, I think. The Salamanca saga continues. We visit Hector with Nacho and Hector's nephew, Lalo. Now, I didn't like Lalo last episode. He was only in it for a bit, but I thought, I don't know, he just had the look of like a kind of he didn't portray the kind of power I thought in that scene. But this episode, Lalo, if that's how you pronounce it, Lalo, really surprised me. I like this guy. At first, I thought he was just going to be a thug, right? That Nacho would defeat. But he seems pretty smart. He's more than I bargained for. And his whole trip with Nacho, going to visit Gus, and then let's go check out the laundry place, you know? And there is just a sense of urgency and agency to the character that I should have known better. This is Better Call Saul. These are the guys that are the best. They're not going to bring in some schmuck for Nacho just to take down. There's going to be levels to this. And I love it. And I was interested in Lalo and the whole story that he told Hector and introducing the famous bell. It was amazing. And I think that Gus may be underestimating him. And maybe we're going to learn there's more to this story about how Gus became Gus, you know, that we saw in Breaking Bad. Sometimes I forget, I don't know, somebody, have we seen Lalo before? Do we know about him? I forget things. And you know what? The thing is, I don't want to go back and rewatch Breaking Bad until Better Call Saul is over. So I don't look things up. So if anyone remembers, tell me, but I don't think so. So at first I was like, I don't know what's going on last episode, but now I'm totally in on this. And I just love Nacho. I just want Nacho to be happy. Werner and the Germans. This whole time that we've been watching Mike, maybe what, the past 2-3 episodes? Actually, I think there was one episode Mike hardly was in. I think it was the episode before last. But Werner's been working on this plan to use the little laser to fuck up the cameras, how he was going to escape from the roof, how he was going to get through that supply room, how he was going to get up the ladder, all that. It's such a Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul universe type of plan that at one point we could have seen him plan it out, you know, like we see Mike in the cuts, do, right? Maybe even throw a split screen in there. But we just see the end result. And the way they shoot it, do, we follow the path. Oh, beautiful. Just beautiful. They did that on purpose to tell us look what we did. Normally, we'd show you every little tiny fucking bit of this plan, but now you just get this. And that's why I think that even the way the camera followed, because we didn't really even follow the guy. The guy was already past that, right? It's like the camera was on its own path, the way they shot it. And we were that. And it was a nod to the audience. And I love it. And I thought it was fantastic. Now Mike's going to have to fucking kill Werner. We all knew it was going down this path. Very sad. Very sad. Very sad. I guess the kid who was fucking up, who was making a scene at the strip club and complaining to Mike before, was a red herring, and it was Werner the whole time. I thought it was going to end up in some weird triangulation where Mike had to make a decision, but that was kind of a red herring to us. And it was, again, I think, a nod to the audience when he's that young kid who is acting like a little prick is the one who gives Mike the beer and says, Mike, get a beer, you know? And he actually means it, and Mike smiles. So that's interesting that worked out, but the main guy, Werner, didn't. Isn't that always how it is, right? Gus is going to definitely want him killed, and Mike has to tell him. So I think he's going to end up dead. And who's going to finish the project? I don't know. When are we going to see Gale again? The scene when Werner goes down to follow the line for the dynamite before he escapes and all that nearly gave me a panic attack. That was shot so well. The silence in it, the way he walks away and just starts shaking and he's like, Werner, get yourself together. The acting was fantastic. The low light, just the use of the headlight. It was fantastic. What a great scene. This episode was amazing. Amazing. I love the gimmick with the truck going over the metal in the road. Magnets, bitch. All right, so that brings us to the Jimmy and Kim thing again. Andy says, the scene with Jimmy and Kim in the parking ramp was one of the best scenes Better Call Saul has ever done. Both actors are simply amazing. Jimmy is so self-destructive, it's heartbreaking. I hope Kim gets the hell away from him before he destroys her. I totally agree. At one point during this episode, Andy, I felt like Jimmy was going to end up getting her arrested or killed. And for about a whole commercial break, all I could think to myself was, get the fuck away from him, Kim, because I love Kim and I think she's amazing. And what a great, one of the best characters. Get away from him. And what we see is him packing up and the brilliance of Thomas Schnauz and Vince Gilligan and everyone involved and actors, of course, writers, everyone involved in this is that she says, you just want to be a lawyer again. And he says, that's all. That's what I want. I just want to be a lawyer again. And she says, well, then that's where we start, right? Or that's a start. I was thrown off. I did not think that he wouldn't get his license back. Now I got a little confused with the montage when they did the time jump, but now it's I understand what's going on. And I was, though, surprised he didn't get his license. Were you listening to me? Were you not surprised? We know he becomes a lawyer, right? Saul Goodman is a lawyer. We know he is a practicing legal lawyer in Breaking Bad. So what happened? That's what surprised me. They threw us for the loop. The whole scene with him not mentioning Chuck, my God, it's been brilliant. The entire fucking season, he will not talk about Chuck. And he has to talk about Chuck. Kim says it to him. They've read the transcripts. The whole thing was about Chuck. And the lady asks him at the end, she was giving him an out, really. I really think she was. I think she saw the desperation in him and she was giving him an out. That whole Supreme Court thing was so pathetic. It was so sad. Who in your life has inspired you? Of course it's his brother. He says, I was lucky to fall in with some people. He's talking about his brother, his whole life. And he just doesn't even mention it. He won't even talk about it. Denial just ain't a river in Egypt, as they say, right? Amazing. And the strength of writing, I don't know else how to describe it, of not letting him do it. Sorry for the loudness. Even with the conversation with Kim when they're on the top, and he's like, and you didn't mention Chuck? And he's like, why would I mention Chuck? And the face that she gives him where she's like, oh, she's like shocked, but she doesn't, she's like almost embarrassed at the same time for him. There's just it's like instantly a wall of a billion miles was between them because he had no idea that he had fucked up. And this is the guy who can talk and do and bullshit anyone at any time at the drop of a hat. But when it came to the thing which most destroys him and is most the center of who he is, he just can't even talk about it. It was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. And what I think, and it was, and I have to say that the one thing jumping from that fight, how amazing that was shot, the utter beauty of it, and especially the last shot up high where you're looking down and you see the whole building. To Jen jump after the commercial, I think it was after a commercial, to Jimmy's packing up and we see it in the mirror though, right? In the mirror. That's how we start. It's a disconcerting entry into this. That's on purpose. What's happening? It was so new wave, like French new wave. It was so expressionistic to just jump to the end of the fight. They had the fight. They were home already. They got in the cars. They left. It was like hours later and he's packing up and they are exhausted from battling each other. And Kim says, that's where we start. And what makes me think is that she is going to make him into Saul Goodman. She is going to help him. Maybe it's going to be their last grift together, their last hurrah. I hope it is, and I hope it's not what ends up with fucking Kim in jail, because now I'm scared for Kim again, because I was happy when he was packing up and leaving. I would have been honestly, I would have been happy if that was the last time we saw Kim. Because then at least she would have been away from Jimmy. Really. That's how I felt at that point in time. I was connected to these characters. But I think that she is. Is that what it said to you? Out there, listeners. Do you think that she is there? That's the last grift. He's going to become Saul Goodman legally and become a lawyer and get his law degree as Saul Goodman, not as Jimmy. So. And I think Kim's going to help him. Ugh. All right. I'm like tired just talking about it because there's just so another shot when Nacho and Lalo get into the, I think it's a Camaro in Gus's parking lot. There's just, again, when there's an extra shot in these episodes where it's just a static shot, that shot of the building, Do you think that that's easy? That is not easy to get. To frame the shot of even the car pulling out, you've got to make sure the car pulls out right, and then you call cut, and then there's a no, and then something happens. There's takes involved. This is people's time, money, energy. These shots are there for a reason. Now, oftentimes, if you listen to the Better Call Saul behind the scenes podcast and all that, which is great, the insider podcast, the editors talk about what they got, right? They get the shots and they have to work with what they get. But you also just go listen to the podcast. You'll understand better about how there's a synchronicity that develops between what they're doing in the editing room and what they're doing on the set, even if they're not in constant communication, and even if time or scheduling or whatever doesn't permit it, right? Or distance doesn't permit it for them to communicate in that way, it develops over time. So they're given these shots and they use them and they take time to get them. I watch this stuff and it's like, look, they go from like a mid-wide, Lalo and Nacho get in the car. That's all you need. The car pulls out. That's all you need. Just keep the camera there. You could have cut there when they get in the car. We understand in the language of visual explanation, they're leaving. You don't need to then go to a static shot where the car is still. Then it pulls out. You don't need that shot. But it was so beautiful. And also, it was coming from up. It bespoke a kind of power that Lalo was there. And Nacho too. Nacho started to feel it. So anyway, I could go on and on about Better Call Saul. Thank you for listening. Daily DVR is a proud member of the DVR Podcast Network. Listen, if this is the first time you're listening to the pod, check us out at dvrpodcast.com. If you want to support me, independent podcaster, doing it in my living room, we're available 5 days a week, or you can become a patron. Go to patreon.com/DVR. You can email us at dvrpodcast@gmail.com. On Friday, Justin Thomas will be on to talk about Mayans. We're going to have a great, Justin's a smart guy. We're going to explore characters and archetypes and fun stuff like that. Get into it. That'll be very cool. Until then, I'm going to go watch some TV. Peace out.